Yes, well, maybe. We don't know. So, to make this more cheerful for Garbanzo, rather than torturing cats and tying them to, let's think of his positive attributes. Well, I think I can. I mean, the fact that he wasn't, when you, that time I tuned into him, I don't think anything is evil. Even evil isn't evil. I mean, it's both sides. So I think that genuine caringness of you was paramount.
Well, he would have changed as I changed, and I changed through him, through his presence in my life, and never more so than now that he's passed. Like, it's more than an opportunity, it's not the right word, but anyway, the opening for change that's happening with his passing has been throughout. Throughout the time knowing him, I've learnt to love. I've actually learnt to love. And I didn't have anyone to teach me. I didn't. My mother couldn't teach me. My father couldn't teach me. And my brother certainly didn't teach me. Even my sister couldn't teach me. And even my wives and my girlfriends. And actually, I suffered unquiet love for years. And I when Garbanzo passed, and I had this experience that I described to you last time of experiencing the essence of our connection as this love energy that wasn't dependent on him or me being here in any kind of form that was eternal. It occurred to me that I used to suffer over women. Like, I used to fall in love with women constantly and be rejected, and I would go into this place of anguish, and I felt that it would open my heart, and I would feel like I was connecting to Christ. I had this ongoing thing; it would happen time and time again, and choosing these women who I wouldn't be able to connect with, I wouldn't be able to be with, and going into this space where my heart was being cracked open. So it's like something that I was trying to learn. I was trying to teach my. I was trying to rediscover my capacity to love. For my whole adult life, and Garbanzo. Yeah, he was my master, if you will. He was the one who showed me that, and. I do think that it was a two-way thing. I think in some way, I mean, because I observed it in him, he was distrustful when he came, when we first, when we first lived with him, and he didn't know how to love, and he became more and more loving over the years. He changed steadily, like more than any other animal I've known. His character seemed to change over time.
Because, like he says, we said that bit about the purring, so he knew that his purring was medicine for you,
But
but it was also medicine for
for
him
him.
because you were,
And he didn't purr in the early years. The only time he purred, I think he didn't purr at all to begin with, but then he would purr when he got sexually aroused, with a blanket or what have you, and been, doing that thing that cats that are still in a kitten stage do. They need the blanket and they bite on it as if they're suckling. He would purr then, but not at any other time. But in the last couple of years, he did. He would also purr in more, normal conditions just from being petted. So even he had a hard time purring, learning to purr.
Yes, he was definitely not an ordinary cat, that's for sure. Oh, there was the other one, wasn't there? There was the other bit we've left out where I was driving up to Ipswich, and that's with that, and I felt his presence, and I said, if. Or give me a sign if that's you, Garbanzo, or something. And then instantly that white lorry went past with that big black cat on it. and it was, what was it called? Perfect Removals. Wasn't
Well, that removal, if that was what it's called, that's
what's that? I've got the picture. I saw it earlier. It's on one of the emails. I sent the logo of the van. Yes, I think it's called the Perfect Mover. That's what it's called. Perfect Mover.
Right. And
That big cat. Yes.
he was a world traveler.
So, but I suppose, yes, consciousness can do whatever it wants, though.
Well, so I guess it's the last 2 or 3 nights. Well, I had the dream I sent you, that'd been about 4 nights ago, in which Garbanzo was, it was as if he was materializing on the bed. I don't think he was literally doing so, but I won't rule that out either. But my sense was being half awake and beginning to hear him and feel his physical presence, and then him being fully there, but at that point I was dreaming, and him chiding me for wanting him to be a cat again, or wanting to experience him as a cat. And then a night or a couple of nights after that, so this would be 2 nights ago, I had a series of dreams, felt like all night long, in which I was with Gobanzo, and it was like just in the days before he died, and I knew that he was going to die, unlike how it actually was, and so I was spending quality time with him, giving him love. And in the midst of those that night's dreaming, I dreamt a dream that I couldn't remember, and it was as if I wasn't allowed to remember it, because I felt frustrated when I woke up. And it was like, when you've had a big dream and you can sort of, it's there at the edge of your vision, but you're not, you just can't, you
Grab it.
can't grab it, but you could just feel the kind of energy of it. It was like that, and all I could remember was I was with this being that was humanoid. I mean, as in standing tall, anyway. And I'm worried, of course, how much I've added to it afterwards with my mind. But anyway, and it seemed to be Garbanzo. The energy was of Garbanzo, and there was this wounded insect, this very tiny beetle that had been wounded, and I was upset. I thought maybe I'd killed it, but this being was saying it's okay. And then last night I again dreamt of what, well, it seemed like I was dreaming of Garbanzo, but it was no longer a cat. Yeah, and again, I can't remember it, but I mean, it does seem as though, and this is a big part of the learning curve, I think, letting go of form and identification, that the first set of dreams was helping me to let go of any regret, because I did regret not spending more time with Garbanzo. How could I not? And particularly, in those last days, and just thinking like all the times I was doing something else rather than being with him. So although it's a very small regret, because rationally, I mean, it was always going to be that way. I wasn't going to spend 24 hours and 7 days a week sitting with him. So, but
Catching mice.
emotionally, there was still something. And so those dreams, I've really felt something cleared through that emotionally. Like I wasn't feeling that same feeling of kind of anguish of, something that had been taken away from me feeling. And then these other dreams that I can't remember, the sense that Garbanzo, what I knew as Garbanzo is present, and that I have a relationship with that, completely outside the framework of, my memories, my set of memories of what Garbanzo is or was.
Because you sent that email on the same day I had sat down to meditate a couple of days ago, wasn't it? And I'd thought, oh, Garbanzo's around making his presence felt before he goes off. And I didn't bother to kind of tune in or anything. But then you sent that email to say that you'd had the dream about him, and I had that thing that he wasn't, he was sort of saying he wasn't a cat. And I got this feeling that he was this kind of tall character. Not human. But it was kind of, yeah, I just felt he was sort of saying, kind of, hi, I'm not a cat anymore.
Yay! No more cat stuff.
Kind of thing. But he's, I don't know, because the mind will put onto energy something it can the perceptions, it will interpret energy, won't it, into put it into a shape and a form so that the mind can recognize it, like seeing a gnome wearing a hat and gnome clothing.
Yeah, happens all the time, apparently.
Or fairy, you know. Mean, so many other bits, but hopefully that's, I don't know how that's going to come out or not.
Yeah, well, I had the feeling that we were going to, work on a mystery or a puzzle today, but maybe we're not, because maybe we're just kind of summing up and looking at all the pieces, and maybe they all fit together. I mean, they certainly do at some level. Although, of course, none of this should be taken literally, those listening at home, right? We've created a narrative out of something that can't be reduced to a mental narrative, and
I mean, I can, yeah, I mean, I've never met the chap.
right, important point, yeah.
Physically. I've never even seen him other than, and I had no reason to conjure any of that up. But it was so real. So my own experience is that it was as real as it was an experience. You know, him, the way he jumped onto my lap and communicated that, and it was, yeah, he taught me things as well. I mean, I'm great, in some ways, I'm grateful for him for embodying. I mean, we never even touched about the stone dreams and how that linked into the book I was going to write, and how Garbanzo was very much part of sort of bringing up to date those symbols I'd had, you know, when I was a kid, of the black cat and the white cat at the bottom of the labyrinth, which was sort of forgotten about. So he helped, well, both of you helped bring that out of my field, kind of thing, to some sort of conclusion, which I then talked about on that retreat with B, when he said, "Do away with the imagery and go to what the deeper meaning is. Don't use the imagery, whereas the deeper meaning is the black cat and the white cat, the masculine and feminine, the yin and the yang, and the integration to wholeness between the black absolute and the white energy of the feminine or the creation or the light or whatever you want to put it." So it came into my life, it, he, you, it, the scenario, the story, as part of an integration for me, as much as it was whatever it was on your side of the fence. It had a meaningful storyline which linked straight back to me being a child and the Egypt and everything and karmic links with Egypt, which I'd known about since childhood. Well, not known consciously, but so it came to it was a completion as well. And the garbanzo dance was like a completion or an integration or a becoming more conscious of that
So when you were
integration.
doing the garbanzo dance and you were thinking, remember, remember.
What was happening was it seemed that I was pulling in from the multidimensional aspects of being, if you like to put it that way, bring them into form. So it was like the parts which were not embodied were like being crashing through the dimensions into that space, into the body, to the ground. It was also grounding it as well. So it was like bringing it through the body. It's coming through in pulses. It was poof, poof, you know. It was like yeah. So it was clearing, but it was also bringing in and down and through.
And were you aware of what was going on with me
No, I was not aware of
around you,
anything
huh?
going on in the room. Because that was so weird, because I was stamping, and I thought I was stamping and making it, but making a big space, because it seemed to be so powerful, the energy coming through. It was massive amounts of voltage just coming through. But then it was very clever that I wasn't actually standing on the person next to me. So they said I wasn't actually touching them. So it was consciousness knew where the boundaries were with the people, you know, people. So although I was moving around, I wasn't hurting anybody or touching anyone. I was just doing my dance in a sort of, my stomp was happening in a very small space. But you were laughing, weren't you? At yourself.
I was lying on a mat like several people down from you, and I was the only one laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen or heard, ever, pretty much. I mean, it really, like, I wasn't puzzled by my laughter. I was just it was just hilarious. I found it hilarious, but the laughter was, I knew it was a different kind of laughter. It was like bubbling up from really deep inside of me. It was a feeling of joy. Like, even though I was laughing because it was funny, I was also laughing for deeper reasons. And there was also a sense of remembrance. Like, I was mentally, I was even, not, I wasn't aware of remembering anything, but I was aware that I was remembering, which is bizarre, kind of. Seems like a contradiction, because I wasn't remembering memories, I was just remembering what I am.
It was like remember. Yeah, that was. It was like whatever the sounds I was making. It was like remember your. Wake up, remember your heritage. Not from here, but from somewhere else. Soul heritage. Because that was the other one, wasn't it? Because that was that other time there was that language of light thing happened. Was that after one of the healings? I can't remember. It was this, and then I walked out of here and I picked up the book, which I don't even know how it's in my bookshelf. I never bought it, which was the Starseed Transmissions. And you said that book you'd had that when you were,
20.
you know, young,
It was a
that book.
t key book for me in terms of that cemented along with a couple of other non-New Age literature but artifacts. Cemented my conviction that I was living in the end times when I was 20, something like that. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it mentions cat people. Wouldn't surprise me if it did.
No, it didn't. No, it was about the language of light. Was about the communicating through light. Because like that was the art. It might have been after that healing, but it was like this conversation I had with you, which was like it was done through flashes of light exchange, like
When?
electrical,
When did you have this conversation?
electric. When after, well, I haven't got the date written down. It was after, shortly after that healing. I told you, and then I went through to get the book. I picked up my hand, picked up the book, which then told me about the language of light, talking the language of light, and then I realised that's what had been happening. It wasn't on this level. It was just very strong kind of thing. Anyway. It's all, it's phenomena, so don't want to get attached to it. But it.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's. I mean, where I'm at right now in this moment, I mean, is that. Well, remembering something Dave said to me in the last one-to-one, which is intellect is your enemy. Which I already knew, even though it's also my ally. I mean, it doesn't. It's not. It doesn't. It's not either or. It can be both, but. At this particular time, in terms of being opened up by Gobanzo and by his dying, and very aware of not wanting to close down again, and of the ways in which that is, will happen, the ways in which it can happen. So we're talking about Gobanzo a lot now, and obviously, and like, I mean, we're talking about the different concepts around Gobanzo, really, like Because so I've got all these memories about Gobanzo, and that's the Gobanzo. The Gobanzo that is in those memories, that those memories refer to, is the Gobanzo that I miss. And so when I think about Gobanzo as he was, then I grieve. And if I want to grieve, and I want to, if I feel myself closing down and sort of going into my head, and I want to be more in my heart, then I can think about Gobanzo and remember him and open up. But on the other hand, that kind of reinforces a couple of things. One is my connection to the past and the memory Gobanzo as he once was, and another thing is it kind of reinforces my need to grieve, or my the possibility of being open or being in my heart depending on grief, which it doesn't, it needn't. And I want to have as strong and as clear a connection to Gobanzo as I had when he was alive, and as I feel to him now when I grieve him, but without him being alive, because that can't happen, and without grieving. I don't want to grieve forever. I'm going to grieve as long as I need to grieve. But there's a love connection that is, in listening to Bernie, that audio you said, he talked about this too, that there's a awareness of the deep of love that doesn't require pain. Like the pain is maybe necessary to awaken.
Yes, but it's not, it's nothing to do
The
with
right.
the love which is
No.
there all the time. So, what is your difficulty in feeling or knowing that love without the Garbanzo?
Because it's very subtle, and it's, well, you know how it is. Like, there's so much noise of just everyday stuff, and we adapt mentally, and we reconstruct, we reconfigure our identity. So, things happen like this, like Gobanzo passing, and but it can be anything. The opportunity is to let go of the story at any time. We don't, it can be just a ray of sunlight on the glass, but certainly a big loss and grief, and there's an opportunity to just say, enough. I don't need these defenses. I don't need these structures anymore, to just be what I am, to just be the love that I am. But when that doesn't happen, then we reconfigure and say, okay, now I'm the Jason who's lost Gobanzo, and now, and I become a slightly different, and but still, and so I don't know. I mean, it's, rediscovering the capacity to love, of course, makes me more acutely aware of how incapable I was before rediscovering it. Not that it's either or, but so then it makes me more aware of how I'm not loving, and it's just all part of the process. I'm just describing a process, I suppose, but
So the biggest thing is, as we all know, is the intellect wanting the mental, stimulation or food or habits which keep us thinking about love or than being it. And I think with the internet and things, that's a difficult one, simply because of the dopamine and things which is in fact been found to be kicking in the brain when one switches on the
Yeah,
internet.
really.
They've done, yeah, they've done like the feel good hormone. Every time you click from one page to another on the internet or do, there's a spike. They've done. So much is why we're all, not you, but so many people are so
The stimuli.
addicted to check stim. Yeah, and it's a fix, like, like going on Facebook, for
Right, because
example.
it's the promise of love. Without having to experience it, you think if I go to Facebook, maybe somebody's liked me, or I go to Twitter.
I don't think it's even that. I don't think it's
Well,
even. It's not even that. It's the actual brain wave changing between clicking from one
sure, but
web
we're
page
not
to
just
another.
machines. I mean,
It
there's something in it for that deep part of us that needs love. It's got to be motivated by something, right? And that's speaking for myself. I know that. I check my email thinking maybe somebody loves me. I check my Facebook thinking maybe somebody loves me. If you strip all the rest away, that's what I'm looking for.
my comment.
Yeah.
Yes. Just realized I've this whole session I've been playing with this rubber snake. Maybe this is symbolic of something
Well,
or other.
it would have to be, but it's also something that Garbanzo would like to have played with.
He likes rubber snakes, does
He
he?
would have
Would he have
done,
done?
yeah, of course.
Don't even know why it's on my desk, actually. Anyway, right. So, have we concluded this nearly?
I don't know. What do you feel?
Well, I don't really know what you're going to put it on your finger and what you're not.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I won't do much editing because it's too much work. I'll edit the dead bits and stuff, but I'm not going to shape it into a masterpiece or anything. It's just, this is, assuming I use it, because there's always that possibility, but I wanted very much to. When I get back to podcasting, and I guess if that's what we've done today, then I have got back to podcasting. I wanted the focus to be on Garbanzo because, to represent the change, the sea change. I suppose there's one thing I wanted to say, whether it's an opening or a closing or both, but the. A lot of this for me is about, I guess it's the twins of love and death, because it's rediscovering the capacity to love more, deeply, to be present in the love, and accepting death. I mean, accepting death in a way that isn't mental, because I mean, mentally, well. I don't think it even counts for much to accept death, but to accept in a way that is. I don't even know. It's like, because that's the thing that's inescapable about Gabanza dying is that he's dead and that he's gone. Like, and when I think of him now physically, I remember that he's buried under the earth, and I think of him, the worms eating his corpse. I'm not saying I dwell on this. I'm just saying that that's the reality of death. At a physical level, and it's heartbreaking, and it's heartbreaking to the point of being horrifying, at a mental level, just to think. But it's not really real, in terms of, I mean, that mental horror isn't real. The heartbreak is real, but the mental horror of my God, Gobans is food for worms. How could that happen? That's not really real because some part of me knows and is experiencing that Gabanzo is not that old coat and he never was. And that's true of me and of you and my wife and my brother and my mother and my father and all of us, every last one of us who are just here for this moment and then we're gone physically. That. To to me, that's been the obstacle. That reality, the mental resistance to that reality has been maybe the primary obstacle to the living and being present and loving. Because the deeper I love, the deeper the anguish of saying goodbye. Not that I worked it out as a kid, but that's the pattern. That my mother was there, and suddenly she's not there, and the tearing pain and anguish of that, and then the gradually or rapidly shutting down. Because if every time I open and feel love, and I'm in the flow of love, and then something happens that I feel getting wrenched out of it, it's too life-threatening.
Risky.
So somehow, I say learning to love death, but I'm just trying to reduce it to something I can put into words, but it's almost like that. Loving life and loving death, and allowing them to be one expression or two expressions of one.
Or death of that which is temporary anyway. So the deeper one loves, the more one is connected to the part which doesn't die anyway.
It's the place to be.
So, I think we left anything out really. Just honouring his life.
Yeah, somebody suggested I write a book about Gobanzo today at the website, and of course I've already started it. It's just that it's about Gobanzo and Crowley.
Oh
I mean,
no.
so much for the
Love. What
the
about the.
sentimental children's story that could come from it. Well, I can always separate them out or make one just about Gobanzo, but I can't tell Gobanzo's story faithfully without it being very dark and having all those dark elements in it, of course. Nor would I want to. So, but yeah, it's something about, well, what you said, really honouring and kind of bringing it all to a close in some way in myself, I think.
Maybe you can now be fully on the light path. I mean, I don't mean light as in the, you don't need to go down the Crowley route again. You can
Well, I
now.
certainly wasn't planning to go down the Crowley route, but as I said to Dave, I mean, nothing on the outside's going to change, I don't think. It's all in her. So, my work of exploring the depths is that's my work. That is the light worker's work. So, we don't really meet on that point. I think you have a different idea about somehow being with the light means focusing on the light, whereas for me, it's the opposite. Being with the light tends to mean focusing on the darkness. That's where the light wants to go, and that's of course where the light is needed, is in the dark. So.
Well, I was told, as I said the other day, by a certain person, why was I focusing on the dark things, such as things happening in the world?
Yeah. Like there are any other, but anyway, carry on.
But I suppose the difference is the mental focus, I suppose, where one, I mean, I can get sucked into
Yeah.
Masonic storylines, for example, and then realize I'm not actually helping the collective to lift up if I'm going down there. I mean,
Well,
I think it's the thing with Bernie was saying about
yeah.
where are we placing our are we living what we are knowing? Because the lower levels will be transformed if we can keep our consciousness aligned with what we're knowing in the heart, kind of thing, rather than what I do is read the news and go looking for political intrigues and conspiracy theories or something.
Right, so then
Which
you would.
entertains me, but it's actually not helping. It's not actually helping anybody.
So then you would project that onto what you see me doing. If that's your pattern, you would imagine that it would be mine also.
No, I wasn't talking about you. I was just talking about what I raise for myself.
I know, but you do assume it about myself as well. Like, oh, he's writing about Crowley again, or oh, like, oh, he's because of how it what it. What it is for you and what the
Well, maybe
yeah
it's your
and
south node. Isn't
because I mean it's well I mean it must be the same for you. And I was just going to say it's one can't if one's an alcoholic one has to understand the reason for the alcoholism. It's not enough just to stop drinking, right? Because one can be a dry drunk. So if we're drawn into these areas, it's not enough just to say, no, I won't go there. It's a question of going
No.
there with more awareness. And as you say, so it's in a way that's actually healing rather than just fingering the wound. And so that's very much, that's always been in my awareness. And so am I actually, going in here out of some masochistic urge? To just dwell in darkness, to be a pig in shit, or am I going there because the deeper part of me, is drawing me there to see something, and that's what I'm discovering is how to discern the difference there. But of course, we're in, like you said about that vision of me, when you were healing, working with me, we're in those dark constructs of mind anyway, and that is very much the world. So it seems as though they dissolve from the inside, not by pulling out of them, and then doesn't it?
No,
Like,
it has to be yes, you can only unplug from internally, but also by not feeding them. It's a fine line, isn't it?
it's a tar
Because it's a fine line between, as B was saying, we can what we put our attention on increases that energy. That's just a law. What we focus on increases the potency of that thing. Whereas to know it's there and see it for what it is, but keep transcendental to it, not escaping from it, embracing it all, but keeping as rooted in that
Right.
awareness without actually feeding it is the balancing act.
So
So
the
not denying it, not running, embracing it all, but not potentizing it.
Right, so but that embracing it all, that's the key, and that's the thing that is so hard to do, needless to say. And so it seems there's something in there what you're saying, that as long as we're thinking, ooh, that's dark stuff, got to be careful, we're not embracing it. So we keep going back to the wound to see that it's not evil, it's not, it's a wound, and it needs to heal, and so we need to attend it and not kind of try and separate ourselves from it. So, like, for me, to use, because it's always good to use specifics, this with Crowley, like, my feeling about Crowley now is very close to yours, I think. It's like, I don't want to go there. I don't even want to think about Crowley. I just wish the fuck I'd never heard of him. But of course, I did, and I had so much affinity with him that I pretty much, kind of continued his work in some way in my life, and made my life in a way a continuation of his, and so I can't deny that, or pretend that's not the case. So then it's like going back. Now my tendency is to go back to Crowley and show everybody what a sick bastard he was, and warn everybody to stay. And of course, that's not going to help anyone. So the real challenge for me is to be able to look at that particular, pus-filled boil in a compassionate way that will actually allow me to address it and treat it and heal it. In terms of the specifics with Crowley, like, if he did all these things and he was this kind of destructive individual that he appears to be, then there was a reason. Like, there was some terrible wound in him. So to actually approach that subject compassionately, that is a real challenge for me, and I think that that's a worthy challenge, for a writer. Remember that I'm a writer, so I'm always going to do that anyway. So
Yes, I don't know. Yes.
yeah, I know it's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it, and I do enjoy it, post-Garbanzo, it was very clear, Garbanzo's died now. Do I go back to any of what I was doing before? Maybe not. I'm definitely wanting to keep a space where maybe I wouldn't podcast, maybe none of it would continue. But so I wasn't taking refuge in it. But it was drawing me to it. Like, this is your life. These are the parts of your external life, and they have life. It's like having a garden. I'm not going to stop watering my garden, but approaching it with a more openness than before, and less intellect. Really being less intellectually focused, I think, is, for me at least, is the key in terms of exploring. So exploring these realms in a heart, with more of a heart frequency or focus of the heart, was very, very difficult, because, I mean, the tendency is for the intellect to come up as a shield, and if you're going into trauma and all of this stuff that we're both drawn to intellectually, it's safe with the intellect, and so it can be fun then, in a weird, sick, perverted way. But if you're going in with the heart, it's not fun. It can be enriching, but it's not titillating. It's something else. And so, yeah, for me, owning up to, in a sense, owning up to my complicity with that stuff is definitely a big part of. Even though the pact is now done, I think there's still something to testify to, in terms of, because it's not done throughout the world. It's not over, on a planetary scale.
No, you're not in Britain at the moment, but all the, and I haven't got the telly, but you know, all the hoo-ha about Brexit or stay or go and all these different, the stay camp,
What hoo-ha? Brexit?
Brexit.
Don't know that one.
Brexit is the talk of Britain at the moment, which is whether we leave the EU or, you don't know
No,
this.
I don't.
Oh, right. Well, basically, it's this big, big, massive showdown happening, whether we leave the EU on the 20. We vote. There's a referendum on the 23rd of June whether we stay in Brit, EU or leave. And so there's massive kind of clashes between far right people saying one thing, leftists saying the other.
Which
There's
wants
been
which? The right wants separation?
Brexit is, well, it's a mixture because there's no, it's no, not political
Right.
really. So there's got Cameron and Co want to stay in, but other parts of the Conservative Party want to leave. So a lot of right wing people want to leave, a lot of left people want to stay. And so this is massive propaganda going on, but you can also see how I wouldn't be surprised if another terrorist thing is planted to sway the
How would
vote, you
it
know.
sway it?
Well, well, if, for example, looks like the vote is to leave, and we leave, then there could be a terrorist attack so that we're pleading to join again. If the ultimate idea is to have a one world government and all that business, you know, and the nation states rather than countries and all this business, then the powers that be will want to facilitate it that
Well, I suppose, but they can just rig the
we
elections anyway, so.
can, yes. But I mean, I was reading today that the Masonic orders of the whole of Europe have got had this meeting a few months ago, and they've had this declaration where they were behind, like, the immigration situation to bring in the Brotherhood of Man, etc., 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 their agenda. There's a signing of pledges and this, that, and the other.
Really?
Yes. Big propaganda and manipulation all around, really.
Sure, yeah, well, I think that's the main thing that's changing, really, is the growing population, of course, but essentially the technology, like the advances of technology mean that we're coming up with more and more sophisticated ways of manifesting our insanity as a species. would be my simple diagnosis. Not that we're becoming more insane or that things are becoming more critical, really, just that it's becoming more and more manifest.
Yeah, everything's out there. It's very unstable at the moment. I mean, you can, energetically, it feels very muddly.
Well, not in hope, not where I am. Although, actually, there is that. Now that I mention it, spoke too soon because there's a crime wave. There's a crime wave, quote unquote, in hope. They're all bitching about it on Facebook. These thieves. I even got it in the thrift store. Like, these two women were bitching about thieves and liars in front of me, and I got so sick of it. I said, "We're all thieves and liars, every last one of us." And this one of the women said, "I've never lied and I've never stolen." I said, "You're lying right now." But she stuck.
Were you laughing when you said it?
Unfortunately, I wasn't, because I thought afterwards that needed to be a bit lighter. Because, but she took it well, though she might have held on to it and held a grudge. But
So that weird man in that shop has insulted me. They'll get the
yeah,
headphones
well,
knocked
not
around.
that, but just generally, it can accumulate. But yeah, it did. It triggered me because. Because of that whole thing, what happens when instability and liminality is people polarize and then they huddle together and then they become more and more intolerant and more reactive. And so actually it may be happening right here as well. I mean, of course, it is happening everywhere, but I mean, it may be observable here.
Yes. Well, on that note, I can see this bloody snake away.
You cast the snake out.
I cast the snake out of the garden.
Peace
Just bounced against the wall.
last. It'll be coming right back. Stronger than ever. That's the end of my conversation with Manisha Campbell. I'd like to thank a couple of donators, Paul and Stephen. For those of you who don't know, I'm doing another podcast over at the New Books Network, and the first in that series was up on the 1st of July. It's an interview with Lance DeHaven Smith, the author of Conspiracy Theory in America. I'll be doing these podcasts at New Books Networks probably about twice a month, sometimes as a crossover with The Liminal List. If you want to be informed as to those podcasts, and for any other reason you want to keep track of what I'm up to, I would suggest following me on Twitter, which is at JarCaphas, or just keeping an eye on things at the blog, and I will also keep you informed via this podcast. That's it. Next week, I'm not sure who I'm talking to, but you can find out by going to horticulture.com/liminalist this coming Saturday.